or not just evolved beasts trying to survive, and survival of the fittest is not the driving ethos, but essentially the concept of transcendence and reaching great aspirations and noble goals. Hello, my name is Simon Jacobson. I'm born and bred in Crown Heights, USA. Let's begin by defining what is Chabad. So the word itself is a Hebrew acronym for the three words Chachma, Bina, Das, which refers to the three cognitive faculties that every human being has as we conceive, develop, and process and come to the conclusion of any concept. So that's Chabad. Why is it called Chabad? Because Chabad is a philosophy, and I would also say a psychology, that uses the mind's powerful resource to reflect, process, try to understand ourselves, our souls, and our relationship with God, and ultimately apply it to our emotions, our feelings. So essentially it's emotions that are being guided by the mind and then brought into behavior, into action. So it's really a comprehensive system of how to actualize your personal mission in life, why you were sent to this world, understanding your role, indispensable role, in God's larger plan. So the Chabad movement technically was established by Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi. We're talking about late 18th century. And this was in White Russia, in Belarus, where he established a full comprehensive system, call it a philosophical slash mystical slash psychological movement, as he received it from his great teacher, the Maggid of Mizrich, who in turn received from the great Baal Shem Tov. And he established this system, which then was passed on generation after generation for seven generations with our Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the seventh generation for Rabbi Shneur Zalman, an unbroken chain that moved from Russia then to Europe and ultimately to the United States. And it wasn't just a philosophy. It was, of course, one that was being taught in a practical way to students and disciples, what are sometimes known as Chassidim, the followers. But they're more than just followers. They were empowered with these teachings to go out and be leaders, each in their respective communities. So in the earlier generations of the Chabad movement, it was perhaps a lot more insulated, a lot more limited. But as technology and travel expanded, so did the different Rebbes, the Rebbe being the leader in each respective generation. And ultimately, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the seventh in this dynasty, where today we know Chabad as a movement, a global movement, with literally Chabad emissaries and ambassadors spread from one corner of the world to the next in every continent, every major city, even minor cities, essentially propagating and teaching the message of Chabad, which is that with our minds and our hearts and our actions, we can transform and we must transform the corner of our world into a more refined, a more civilized, a more spiritual place. So Chabad philosophy is not just a concept and ideology, it's also a practical movement of communities all over the world living by these principles and acting on them as well, and building schools, teaching, educating, inspiring, and illuminating everyone they come in contact with. So I think it's important to distinguish between Hasidim and Hasidism. Hasidim are the people. Now, in every community, there's a culture. Many people, first reaction to Hasid, they say, oh, those guys that wear white shirts, long black coats, some wear side curls on their, what's called peyot on their faces, long beards. That's a culture. And there are differences between different Hasidim. They wear different garments, as we find in different cultures. But I want to focus is not on Hasidim, but on Hasidism. Hasidism is a way of life, and it's also a way of thinking. It's a school of thought. So what Chabad focuses on most, as its name implies, is on the philosophical, I like to call the philosophical psychological approach. And this is not meant to be a critique or meant to be comparing. It's just meant to spell it out. So Chabad, the Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the founder, what he emphasized was a very comprehensive system. It wasn't just a few short thoughts, which you'll find in many other Hasidic movements. It was giving a big picture, like a panorama of how we look at the global picture of life, of the cosmos, of our relationship with each other and our relationship with God. So one of the things that really stands out in Chabad Chassidus, which means Chabad teachings, you'll find there's no short lines, there's no two line. You need to sometimes read 5 pages, 10 pages, 15 pages. There are actually discourses that go for hundreds of pages because it's meant to give the big picture. That's one of the things that jumps out at you. To take a specific ideology or a specific, we'll call it Torah, I would choose from Tanya two major points. One is the first section of Tanya. Tanya is the classic work, the magnum opus of Rabbi Shneur Zalman. It's called the Bible of Chassidus. So in a sense, it's like the cornerstone and really the basis of it all. So I'll take two principles. One is the idea of self-control. The Alter Rebbe lays out, the Alter Rebbe being Rabbi Shneur Zalman, lays out a very comprehensive picture of the struggle that every human being goes through, the struggle between selfishness and selflessness, between survival and transcendence. And he calls it the battle between the animal soul and the divine soul. And we all know what the struggle is like. Every one of us, every moment of our lives, have two choices. You're going to serve yourself, or you're going to serve some higher purpose. You're going to serve others. You're going to just be focused on loving yourself or also loving others. And he says one of the key instruments or tools that we have given to us, and this is like a fundamental principle, which he calls Moyach Shal Talalev, which means self-control, that we inherently, not acquired, inherently have the ability to restrain ourselves, to discipline ourselves, which is a critical point because if you contrast it, for example, to Freud and Freudian thinking, there we have the id. The human being is essentially a beast at heart, selfish. And the concept of self-control is seen more like a superimposed, acquired tool or resource. So the Alter Rebbe is establishing that the human being created in the divine image has fundamental self-control, and we can be therefore expected to be accountable, to be responsible, which and also live up to our greatest potential. We're not just evolved beasts trying to survive, and survival of the fittest is not the driving ethos, but essentially the concept of transcendence and reaching great aspirations and noble goals. That's one principle that stands out. A second one I would take from the second section in this book of Tanya, where he talks more of the philosophy of divine unity. And it's interesting how this parallels so much of where science is going. That despite the fact that the universe, to the naked eye, appears like a fragmentation of multitudes, of millions, billions, trillions of parts, there's an integral unity, like a thread, type of harmony within all this diversity. It's actually the most fundamental prayer in Judaism is Hashem Echad, Shema, and we conclude that God is one. And one doesn't just mean monotheism, one God and not many, but one reality. And this is a critical piece because it essentially tells us that our mission in life is to find that unity in everything that we do, in our personal lives, in our collective lives, on a global level. So it's really about creating unity in a world of diversity. Think of it like many different musical notes, all part of one symphony, one orchestra. And that's another key Chabad Hasidic idea. You may find it in other schools of thought and in other bodies of Hasidic, but it's really extremely elaborated upon throughout Hasidic discourses. Many can ask, why is there so much focus on the mystical dimension in Chabad philosophy and Chabad teachings? So I want to also dispel the myth about mysticism. Mysticism sounds very esoteric, very abstract. And some people just say, hey, it's not for me. It's too lofty, too sublime. So I want to rephrase it. It's all about language. I think all of us, all human beings, would like to know what makes us tick, what makes the world work, the DNA. So the DNA of the human psyche, the DNA of the human soul, is essentially what some people would call mysticism. It's understanding that just as we have a body, and the body has all kinds of systems, and physical medicine analyzes and evaluates and comes to understand whether it's human anatomy or biology or chemistry or dermatology and so on, there's also a study of understanding the spiritual physiology, the spiritual makeup of what who we are. For example, you may have heard of the concept of the 10 spheres, 10 spiritual mystical spheres, but they're really essentially the 10 faculties that again define who the human being is. On a conscious level, we have 3 cognitive faculties, we have 7 emotional faculties. So the spectrum of human interaction and human relationships is based on love, discipline, compassion, determination, humility, bonding, and dignity. So does that sound mystical? It may be for some, but it's really about understanding. It is invisible, so it's harder to understand when you look at something on an empirical, external level, but it's really similar to in physics. You'd learn about the molecular structure of things, the atomic structure, the subatomic structure. So on a spiritual level, spiritual mysticism is essentially understanding the DNA, the inner workings of existence. One of the hallmarks that stand out about Chabad is people talk about the Rebbe, the Chabad Rebbe, sometimes just lovingly known as the Rebbe. So let's talk about a moment. What is the role of a Rebbe? Who is a Rebbe? What is a Rebbe? I think it's also important to state that for many of us, especially Americans, where we know that George Washington refused to be called king or emperor, and instead it's called president, that we actually are repulsed somewhat when we hear about someone having too much authority. So some people have actually, I've been asked this question many times, what is this Rebbe? It's like everybody worships the Rebbe. It's like you have absolute authority. And what happens with our autonomy and our independence and individuality? So I think it's important to let's state it for the record what this really means. So the concept of a Rebbe is not new. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, the great first leader of the Jewish people who took them out of Egypt and led them through the wilderness and so on, is called Rabbeinu, a Rebbe, our Rebbe. So the word Rebbe itself means master or teacher or mentor or spiritual mentor. There are many ways to translate it. But the real purpose of a Rebbe is to actually provide an objective, bigger picture look at life. The fact is all human beings are subjective. We all have self-interest at heart. We all can be biased and prejudiced. A Rebbe is meant to be a person who's a selfless individual, who's transparently connected to a higher purpose through his own work. He's come to that type of selflessness and egolessness. So the Rebbe can provide us with objective guidance and give us perspective on things that sometimes we may be blinded to. That's on a very basic level, the role of a Rebbe. So it's not about a cult personality. It's not about any worship. We only believe in Judaism, one God. But there are godly people in this world. There are people who are men and women of God. What does that mean? It means people who've dedicated their lives not to themselves, but to a higher cause. I speak for myself personally. I sat at the feet of the Rebbe. And what did I learn? I learned about selflessness. I learned it's not about him. It's about a higher purpose. So it teaches you how to be dedication. It teaches you how to live up to your calling and to live up to your purpose in life. So a Rebbe plays a tremendous role as a living example, also as someone who's besides being brilliant, but also knows how to apply these teachings in ways that can address our concerns. The Rebbe was a person who took the pulse of his times, of this generation, and addressed it, issues that come up, whether it was issues in education or issues in spiritual alienation or indifference and apathy. I mean, all the challenges of our times, that the Rebbe would take the teachings of Torah and Chassidus and apply it. So in addition to being that example, also gave us a blueprint, an approach, a methodology, which is what drives every Chabad teacher and leader till this day. Even though the Rebbe is not here physically, it lives on because it's a methodology that was taught to us by the Rebbe. So let's dig a little deeper into the Rebbe's so-called the qualities of a Rebbe. And again, I speak from my personal experience. The first thing that jumps out is actually a verse from the Torah talking about Moses, that he was the humblest man that walked on earth. What I always felt around the Rebbe was a certain profound humility. I know it's not the first reaction most people would think. A leader like of his stature would be charismatic, influential, powerful, awesome, but humility. There was a certain element of almost self-effacement, because it was always not about him. And that was number one. I think it's one of the most important elements in a true leader, because it's not about the individual, it's about what they represent. That's one thing. I remember I was once asked right after the Rebbe's passing about, you know, what does it feel like being around the Rebbe? It felt like that you felt, the individual felt responsible, and you felt empowered that you can do anything that you set your mind to do, which is quite amazing as well. Usually you think you're around a leader, you want to be dedicated to the leader. But no, it was really about your empowerment. You felt that you have a responsibility and a gift to accomplish everything that you need to accomplish in life. That was another thing that really jumped out. Now, there are obviously elements of warmth and empathy and compassion. You saw the Rebbe shine when he was around children. It was just that natural, you know, around children, you usually see what people are like. Some people's face sour up, some people get angry, some people don't know how to deal with children. The Rebbe, like, blossomed when he was around children. He would just glow. And the reason is, as the Rebbe himself once says, is because around children, you're a little closer to the truth. You know, we live in a world where there's a lot of duplicity and a lot of kinds of negotiation and stuff like that. And the Rebbe was around children, there was that type of seamlessness. These are a few things that jump out when I speak about the Rebbe and the qualities. Then there's the final thing I would say is about his brilliant mind, the ability to cut through the symptoms and get to the root of an issue. That's another tremendous thing. You know, many of us deal with the symptoms, we deal with externals, but to be able to see clearly, that type of clarity of looking at something and not getting the distracted or obfuscated by externals and really looking at a person for who they could be, not just what you see. And you saw that when every time anyone went by the Rebbe, whether it was for dollars on Sunday or private audiences or other personal interactions, you could see there was that element of the Rebbe encouraging that person to live up to their greatest potential. Not just talking about what you are right now, but what you're capable of becoming. What's the driving force behind Chabad's all-inclusivity? Well, you see, one of the things that stands out, people go to a Chabad house anywhere in the world. No questions asked, everybody's welcome. Color, size, age, race, level of affiliation. In a true all-inclusive and all-united fashion. Well, it lies at the heart of what Chabad represents. Another name for Chabad that is Lubavitch. Lubavitch is, of course, the city, the town in White Russia where the first Lubavitch leaders lived. But you know, Lubavitch is actually a word, actually made up of two words. Lubavitch. Vitch is like a suffix in Russian, but Luba means love. City of love, think of it that way. What does that mean? Because another fundamental principle in Chabad thinking, philosophy, is not just understanding the unity of all the cosmos and the unity of all of existence, but it's also the unity of all people, which means that we are not complete unless we have each other. There's no such thing as an island unto yourself. So just like a human, healthy human body has many limbs and organs and systems, and a healthy body, they work in a synchronized, harmonic fashion. The same thing as the entire human race. We're all part of one larger organism, whether we feel it or not. Frankly, all war, all injustice, all crime, all violence, all abuse is due to the blindness that we don't see that when you hurt someone else, you're hurting yourself. So Chabad thinking is all about understanding that unity, which is why Rabbi Akiva, the great sage in the Talmud, says that v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, which means to love your fellow like yourself, is klal gadol b'Torah. It's a fundamental principle. So if you were to say, teach me the Torah standing on one foot, which is an actual question and answer given in the Talmud, Hillel says, don't do unto others that which you don't want done unto you, which the positive side is love everyone equally. So this isn't just a philosophy in Chabad. We grow up with it. I saw it from my youngest age. I saw the Rebbe, how he looked at everybody in that fashion. No one got special treatment. There wasn't like, oh, the scholar sits on the top of the aisle and someone else in the bottom of the aisle. Didn't work that way. There's basically no us and them. I always ask this question. I say, you're sitting around the table and someone will say, so who's the greatest soul sitting right here? So Chabadnik immediately will say, we don't know the answer to that question. As a matter of fact, in chapter 32 in Tanya, in the classic work called Tanya, chapter 32 in Hebrew is Lev, which means heart, can also be pronounced as love. The chapter on love, so the Rabbi Shneur Zalman says, the class, this tremendous statement, he says, we don't know who's the greatest soul. We're all part of one larger organism. We have one Father in heaven. And that, when you, that's ingrained in you from your childhood, that's the attitude. That lies at the heart of Chabad's all-inclusivity and basically not ever judging anyone. We never know what people go through, and trying to live by that ethos. There's not a license for everyone to do whatever they like. You can always disagree with someone, but you never invalidate them as a person, because individually we're all part of this one larger organism, one larger unity. So to choose one universal, powerful message, what I would even call revolutionary message, from Chabad, and especially through the words and lens of the Rebbe. I use this line in my book, Toward a Meaningful Life. Birth is God saying, you matter. And let me explain. You know, we have 8 billion people on this planet. So it's very easy to fall into almost a resignation. What can I really accomplish? 1 8 billion people. Imagine a grain of sand on a beach with billions of other grains of sand. We don't feel significant. And technology actually only amplifies that. The idea and concept is this, that you, every individual, was put here on this earth for a reason. You're indispensable. What you have to accomplish, only you, you and only you can accomplish, simply put. And no one else can do what you have to accomplish. This, I think, is one of the cardinal cornerstones. Because when you feel you matter, and you feel your choices matter, and your decisions matter, it changes a whole different level of urgency, a sense of urgency in your life. If you feel it doesn't really matter, how committed can you really be? You know, you don't do it, you don't do it. You do it, you do it. Someone invites you and says, hey, we need you tomorrow morning, wake up early to volunteer. We're going to visit some people in a hospital. And you'll say, do I really have to wake up early? And they'll say, oh, you know what? If you don't want to, okay, it's also fine. It's not really going to be motivating. But when someone tells you, we must have you, we need you, we can't do it without you, it changes the whole equation. So that message of indispensability of each individual, man, woman, or child, is, in my opinion, maybe the first of all messages. Using business language, no business can function without a mission statement. You have to begin with your mission. What is your calling? In Chabad parlance, in Chabad lingo, it's called shlichus. The idea that you have a mission, you're God's messenger, you're an ambassador to bring light and to refine the corner of the world in which you were placed in a way that you and only you can do. So why is Chabad spread all over the world? Wouldn't it seem more potent if everybody just lived in one place? They'd be much more powerful, the numbers and so on. So I'd like to share something I heard from the late Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. This was at the Shloshim, this was 30 days after the Rebbe's passing. So he was speaking about the Rebbe, great love for every Jew across the world. And he made this point, which I think is really powerful. He said, what drove the Rebbe to send his students, young men and women, young couples, literally to every corner of the world? You know, it would make more sense. You send them where there's a lot of Jews. There are many Jews in New York, Los Angeles, London, Paris, Tel Aviv, Melbourne. But to send them to find a Jew somewhere in Bangkok or in Vietnam to bring a matzah seems like not a focused use of resources. And his response was unbelievable. He said, after the Holocaust, where the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, the Nazis, hunted down every Jew, every single Jew, with hate. And we know the extent they went, the lengths that they went. I mean, God Almighty, they would use stethoscopes to see if there's a Jew hiding inside of a wall. I mean, you have to be like the obsession. So if we don't hunt down, the Rebbe says, every Jew with love, with more passion than they hunted the Jews with hate, in a way they will have won. So it's really a demonstration of tremendous love. You know, a parent doesn't say, oh, I have 10 children already. Who cares what happened to the 11th child? love is something that is not measured in numbers. So it's actually that profound love for every single Jew everywhere on earth. And I would say every human being, for that matter, by extension, was what drove the Rebbe saying, no, we're not going to all live in Crown Heights, and we're not going to all live in London. We're not going to all live in one city or two cities or three cities. We are responsible to go out there and help every person we can reach, every Jew we can reach, and we'll do whatever it takes to do exactly that. So when you see Chabad spread over the world, think of it as a tremendous gesture of love, of care, of compassion, and responsibility. That we're not here just to take care of ourselves and be comfortable in our own skin, because many of these Chabad individuals could have been much more comfortable sitting in their own hometown, would have kosher, would have resources, would have schools, and they send their children, they were sent out to all these far places where there was no Judaism, no synagogues, no kosher, and they built empires. It's now 29 years since the Rebbe's passing in 1994, almost 30 years. It's a lifetime, it's a generation. But I want to say this, the Rebbe's message, the relevance, I see more relevant today than ever, because it's far more than the Rebbe as the individual. It's his understanding of the generation in which we're in, all the challenges that we face and all the blessings that we have, which is the sign of a true leader, a leader that's a visionary. And that's why I often say that the Rebbe is the first 21st century leader, even though he passed away in the 20th century, because what he left is a legacy that lives on. And I would encourage everyone to check out, bring any question you have in your mind, in your heart, about your life, any challenge. And I assure you that you can find in the Rebbe's teachings a relevant answer that could even be transformative.